When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Robin Williams is just saying to him, "You're just a kid, and you don't." And he's just,
I love that. I love that bench. So I love how that's set up. I love the bench setting and just like the.
And the camera's just on Robin Williams, and you're just seeing this subtle, he's kind of looking at him with this contempt and this fascination at the same time, because he's just got this kid who, and he's just saying, you know, like you can know all the books about art in the world, you've read everything, but you've never smelt what inside of the Sistine Chapel is like. It's just so beautiful. And then you slowly pan to Matt Damon. And his face, and it's just, he's just cut completely. He's completely, thoroughly ashamed. Mm. No one's spoken to him like that. Such a powerful scene.
Hello, film fans. Joining us in our studio today, we have Scarlett.
Hello.
Anna.
Hello.
And as always, Kobe.
Hello.
And we're here to review Good Will Hunting. Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello and welcome to this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast. Our guests today are Scarlett and Anna. If you would like to introduce yourselves to our listeners and tell them about the work that you do, please.
Hi, my name is Scarlett Russell. I am the entertainment editor at the Sunday Times Style magazine. So I look after all the celebrity covers that we do. I manage the film content, the TV content, the music content. And I have a podcast, Sunday Times Style podcast, called Secrets of the Side Hustle, which is supporting female entrepreneurs that have started their own successful businesses. And you can catch that on all your main platforms. And there is an entertainment podcast in the works, but it's not there quite yet. But do listen out on my social media for some more news about that.
Can you tell us about the Side Hustle podcast and why you started it?
So we started it because we... News UK, the company I work for, wanted to get in on the podcast action. And we had a sponsor, Benefit Cosmetics, were really interested in sponsoring a podcast. And we're throwing around a load of ideas, and there was seemed to be a bit of a gap for women in business. Packaged in a really accessible way. So we wanted to promote a lot of young women who we'd interviewed in the magazine, and they'd done amazing things, and they had great advice. And it's just the way people launch businesses now is so different from 5, 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah. With the gig economy, I guess.
Yeah, the economy and the use of social media, and it's just so interesting. So we have some really great stories. So we started as 6 episodes. We interviewed 6 amazing different women, and then it was so popular we were number 1 on the fashion and beauty charts on iTunes. And then Bobby Brown got in touch and said we would love to sponsor a second series. So we're midway through filming the second series. By the time that this comes out, we've probably already done the second series, but it's fantastic. It's really interesting. It's not, you know, all these stories are so inspiring, but then there are a lot of millennial women there who've achieved so much. And I just think, oh God, I have not achieved anything. So yeah,
but it's inspiring. What would be, do you know what your side hustle would be if you were to start one?
Well, I want to start another podcast.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, there we go.
What's stopping you?
There's nothing stopping me. That's what I'm saying. It's happening. It's just taking a while. But I think the podcast that is you guys have got really interesting podcasts in that it's niche and it's different. I think the podcast market now it's quite crowded. So you have, it's kind of about honing in a really different idea. Mm. And I'm trying to do it through Style and get a sponsor through there, because then you have the backing of the Sunday Times. But then I think, well, maybe I should just do it myself and just get it done instead of waiting. So that's why it's been held up a little bit. So I don't know if I'm going to do it through them or just do it. But I do like the idea of doing yeah, a TV podcast. I don't think there's enough women talking about TV.
So you got out there and did it by yourself, didn't you, Anna?
Yeah, so Girls on Film is women talking about film. Actually, I do it with my executive producer, Heather Archbold. And we have all female film critics discussing the latest releases, talking about classic movies, putting films to various tests like the Bechdel test. And it could be any kind of common release. It could be, you know, a big Marvel film, or we might talk about something with a female director that's a bit more obscure, an art house, try and mix it up. And we do have, what I loved about this is that we thought it might be difficult to attract A-list guests, but by episode 3, Kerry Mulligan was asking to come on. So we've had amazing guests. We've had Brie Larson from Captain Marvel, Lashana Lynch. We've had Catherine Hahn. We've had the
Amasanti.
Amasanti, exactly. Mm-hmm. The girls from Booksmart. Well done. You've been paying attention.
I've been listening. I've been listening to both your podcasts.
Yay. Well, you know, Amma is actually one of my favourite interviewees. She was fantastic. We did a live episode at the Albright in Mayfair, which is an all-female club. And she was just so generous with her time. And so generous with the people that came to watch and ask questions afterwards. Mm. And we had a kind of, someone called it was a bit like a kind of support session network. And it's almost a therapeutic, because everyone was sort of talking about the various issues they had as women, not in a kind of boohoo me kind of way, but in a what can we do about this and sisterhood sort of way, and how do we get more exposure and sort of deal with sort of obstacles. So a lot of that chat goes on and off air, really, on the podcast. But we do a lot of stuff on stage now, increasingly, because people just seem to love coming along and joining in, like at home in Manchester, which is always really good for
them. Yeah, I'm from Manchester. I'm slightly good to the corner house cinema's gone, but home, so I've not been to home much since moving on to London, but
it's absolutely brilliant. They're always so welcoming. We get great people. We had Maxine Peake last time, and 3rd of September 2019 we're back at home, but also then 23rd of October and the 3rd of December. So you can go to homemcr.org if you want to book tickets.
Good. Scarlett, you chose the film we're talking about today, Good Will Hunting.
I did.
Can you tell us why you chose it and give us a 2-minute synopsis?
Sure. So first of all, this is one of my favourite films, so I knew that I could come on, I wanted to talk about it. But interestingly, when I was invited to come on this podcast, it was the weekend, I was thinking about what film I was going to choose, and it was the weekend that coincided with the 5-year anniversary of Robin Williams' death.
Yeah.
And I was kind of looking through, and I did this Insta stories about all my favourite Robin Williams moments on film. And of course, Good Will Hunting came up, and I just thought, oh man, I really want to go on and talk about this film. I was so happy that it hadn't been done before, because I really do think it was his best film, which is saying something, because he's been in incredible films. You know, he'd been nominated for 3 Oscars. This was the time he won, the 4th time. So that was why I chose it. And to sum it up, okay, the film is about a young man, 20-year-old man called Will Hunting. And he is from, it's set in Boston, and he's from a very rough part of Boston. And he's had a very difficult, tough background. And he's a janitor at Harvard. Harvard University.
And it's MIT.
It's MIT. Yeah. Harvard MIT, is that how you say it?
It's the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. It's like the techie part, okay. Whereas Harvard's more like the liberal arts kind of vibe.
Wow, okay. Yeah. Right, okay. So he's that. You find out very early on that he is a genius. He's a mathematical genius, has a photographic memory. And so instantly you're kind of faced with this juxtaposition of this guy from this really rough background who's kind of come from nothing, but he is this amazing mind. And he ends up in prison, and he's bailed out by one of the college professors who's a mathematician, played by Stellan Skarsgård. And he bails him out, and he says, right, so instead of you going to prison, I want you to work with me. I'm going to bail you out. But as part of working with me, I want to use your brilliant mind for maths, but I want you to go and see a shrink once a week. And so Matt Damon thinks, fine, this is better than going to prison. And the shrink is Robin Williams. And thus begins this beautiful relationship that they form, this friendship. And it's this unraveling of Will's character as he goes through a journey where everything's broken down, and you really understand his difficult past and why he is the way he is. And there's a love interest at the same time, played by Minnie Driver, and his best friend's played by Ben Affleck, who's also a great character. And Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, of course, wrote this film. They got an Oscar for this film. They were 21 when they wrote it. It's such an amazing story outside of how amazing the film is. It's so interesting. And it was really what made them the Hollywood players they are now. It broke their career.
Helen, your thoughts on Good Will Hunting?
So I had seen this before. It was quite a while ago, I think. So when you picked it, Scarlett, I was like, oh, I've not seen this for a while. I'm ready to come back and revisit that. And yeah, watching it, obviously, now, it's just really sad that obviously Robin Williams isn't with us today. But it's also really great that he's left behind a great body of work. And he is grating this. And I think this was probably around the time where he'd become a little bit of a joke, had done kind of...
Pat Adams.
Yeah, and as a flubber around here, around that time. So very much maybe sort of doing kids' films and not really doing the kind of films that most people would remember him for, obviously like Dead Poets or Good Morning Vietnam. So for him to do this and be so amazing and give a really subtle performance as well, because he obviously Mrs. Doubtfire is very much laugh out loud and a lot of physical humour. So I think when I watched this, it really kind of changed how I thought about him. And I was actually, yeah, he is actually really good. And
you mean when you watched this the first time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, he is brilliant and a much deserved Oscar. And Affleck and Damon just in this, they're so cocky on and off the film about it and sort of so sure about it and in the way that they are, that it's just a really kind of magnetic performance that they have between them. And when you kind of think now, obviously Matt Damon's pretty stellar, but Ben Affleck's kind of having a bit of a sad time.
Well, he waxes and wanes, doesn't he? With Argo is Stock Rose. Mm. And then he went down again with Batman, even though he's probably getting paid the most he's ever paid in his life, but people aren't regarding him as highly as he did. I think they both waxed and waned a bit, haven't they?
Matt
Damon's been a bit more consistent, yeah. Whereas straight after the kind of Oscar win, Matt Damon was like straight away, and then Ben Affleck did the whole Jersey Girl giggly thing.
Yeah,
and then his ups and downs. And then he won an Oscar, Best Director Oscar, so he's really, it's been more dramatic, actually, weirdly. But their friendship has stayed throughout, which is lovely.
Anna?
Well, this is a really interesting one to revisit because I watched it when it came out and I liked it. I thought it was a good mainstream heartwarming film. And as you say, Scarlett has a lovely behind-the-scenes stories. It's wonderful to see two young script writers writing staff and doing so well. Fantastic. Robin Williams is great. However, I don't think this stands up like on the second thing in 2019 when we're talking now, because first things you see are Weinstein Company. Okay. Yeah. Mm. Okay. So that already puts the bristles up. And then the way that it is written is so much of its time. And it's so interesting to think that these things went past me, you know, the casual sexism, the homophobia, the way the boys talk. Now it is presented as not ideal, you know, the kind of jocular way that they speak about each other and to each other. But it's still presented as funny. And it's, you're still being asked to laugh about guys basically sexually harassing a woman in a bar. Like, so when they go to chat up Minnie Driver, really, I mean, the way they're talking to her, not so much her, but the guy that's trying to defend her honour or whatever, they're actually really vile to him when he's not doing anything particularly wrong. That was my big beef with the film. But there's also Matt Damon's character, you know, he makes a lot of gay jokes to the first therapists, you know, like suggesting that they're gay. And it just left a nasty taste in my mouth. I just felt, even though I can see that it's well-structured in many ways and it's still an enjoyable film and I love the aspect of, you know, the classic aspect of that there's a genius, who is it? No one knows who it is and he's going to be discovered and his life will be changed. That's all wonderful. But this humour, I felt that we were being asked to just go, oh, boys will be boys. Mm. I was really uncomfortable with.
I think that's something that we see a lot in 80s films as well. That haven't aged well, the misogyny, racism, and homophobia kind of plays out. And when you see, when you watch an 80s film, when none of that exists, you're like, oh, right, okay. What happened there? And I was watching it, I was kind of looking down the same kind of lens as you were. When he said like to the first therapist, oh, you just wanted to jump me right then, didn't you? I was like, oh, did you need to go down that kind of route? I think the Weinstein sign did kind of get my heckles up at the start, but then I think this film wouldn't have been made without the Weinstein at the time. And this... I'm quite happy to separate Weinstein Company from the film because I don't think they're as ingrained. He's as ingrained as, you know, like Louis C.K. is and stuff like that. Bill Cosby. I find it harder to separate those guys out from the Weinstein film. And I'm super glad this film got made.
I think for me it was Weinstein as well, but also I remember that obviously Casey Affleck is in it, playing a not particularly
good
nice
guy.
Character.
Yeah,
and that was more, I think, for me. I'm like, oh yeah.
And these guys, obviously, they don't portray themselves to be good guys. at the start, the fight happens because he recognizes a guy that he had a fight with in kindergarten, which is 15 years ago. And I still have a problem with that scene. I'm still like, why are you doing
that?
But see,
it's to set his character, isn't it? That's
the character they're setting up. And I don't think they make any apologies for it. So I kind of went, okay, they're presenting these guys as knobheads. They're all idiots. And unfortunately, that's who we're hanging out with and trying to root for.
But does he have enough of a turnaround? I don't think so.
They weren't shown to be celebrating that. I think that was to show the product of their environment. They're from these really terrible backgrounds. And a big part of Matt Damon's story in this, his Will Hunting's story, is that all he's known is abuse. And so of course he's going to be like that. Of course he's going to be super defensive. And the bit you mentioned where he's homophobic to the first therapist, I don't think we are supposed to laugh. I think that is you're not supposed to agree with it. And actually he's a bit of a dick in that film. This is part absolutely. Of it. This is what I mean by the journey, is that when Robin Williams comes in and he just breaks him down into this little boy, because that's all he is. He is ultimately a little boy with this amazing mind. And I think that all that does is it just builds up to be, you want to see him broken down. It makes the scene where Robin Williams does emotionally just tear him apart, which definitely got him the Oscar, so fabulous. And I think, the Weinstein stuff, sure. Casey Affleck, sure. All that stuff is obviously deplorable. But I think you just got to separate it. It's a different conversation.
Yeah, I mean, the Weinstein thing is, really, I'm with Kobe that you do separate it. And I'm not going to go back boycotting all Weinstein films, but it's an example of how things have changed so much since that film was made. And it's a little reminder at the beginning of the film, when I don't even need that reminder because I'm always thinking about this through this kind of lens. But the fact that it really, in terms of the language of the film, and I do think it is intended comedy a lot of the time, doesn't really stand up if you're, you know, looking at it from this kind of woke 2019 perspective. Even 2 years ago, it might have felt different. It's so interesting how things are constantly changing. I think you and I were actually having this discussion the other day about another film, Scarlett, that, you know, it's amazing how quickly things change, and you yourself will view something differently further down the line. And you've obviously got more of an emotional attachment to the film than I have, so I'm sort of taking more of a kind of, you know, critical look. But I do think it's problematic
with the Will character. When he first meets Sean, when he first meets Robin Williams' character, he could just see he's just going for the stab. He's just going for the stab. So when that scene first happens, where he's having to go at him saying about his paintings, like, "Oh, you met the wrong woman," and that's when he sees that chink in Robin Williams' armor, and you just know that Will is, he might not necessarily be homophobic, but he went for the, I'm going to go for the gay joke with that first therapist. He went for some nonsense with the second therapist that we saw, and he just really wants to break down Robin Williams. And when he does, that's still one of the most startling things for me. I always forget that happens, that Robin Williams gets him around the throat. Yeah. And like says, "I will end you."
Yeah.
And that's really what Will is going for there. I don't necessarily. So I think the first two ones are kind of played for laughs. But he's just trying to be the dick to get himself out of this situation, which he feels is like
the most
oppressive.
Yeah, he just looks for the in and is obnoxious and horrible and gets the end result. Mm. And because he's so intelligent, he can work out what their triggers are and use them.
Yeah, he's bored. He's bored by all of this. And this is why he's so angry, because he's got this gift and he's never been taught what to do with it. And he's not from an environment that would encourage it. So he's just, all these people he just sees as playthings and about getting to them. And he sees Robin Williams exactly right. And he knows that getting to him is by talking about his dead wife and then Robin Williams' reaction. But you see so much in that film, because instantly you see that Robin Williams is how much of his past is still in his present and how much that affected him. And you just set it up for this really interesting dynamic. And then it leads into the next scene which is the Oscar scene, where Robin Williams is just saying to him, "You know, when you said that, I stayed up half the night thinking about it. And then I just stopped thinking about you, because you're just a kid and you don't," and he's just,
I love that. I love that bench. So I love how that's set up. I love the bench setting and just like the,
and the camera's just on Robin Williams and you're just seeing this subtle, he's kind of looking at him with this contempt and this fascination at the same time, because he's just got this kid who, and he's just saying, "You know, you don't mean anything to me. You've got this amazing brain, but you've not lived. You don't know anything. Like you can know all the books about art in the world. You've read everything, but you've never smelt what inside of Sistine Chapel was like. It's just so beautiful." And then you slowly pan to Matt Damon and his face, and it's just, he's just cut completely. He's completely thoroughly ashamed. No one's spoken to him like that. Such a powerful scene.
when you first see Robin Williams in this, I was like on the verge of like, fuck.
I think he's very hairy.
I think just generally like missing him. After the like celebrity deaths that happened in the past few years, I was just like, I think he was one of the biggest for me that like properly.
Yeah.
It's deeply sad and tragic that, you know, he obviously had mental health problems and here he is playing a therapist, and it's just horrible irony of someone that didn't feel he could cope with life and then playing this therapist who's sort of got a lot of the answers despite his own tragedy. Yeah, I agree. It was really poignant.
Obviously the Elliot Smith soundtrack as well, equally as poignant. He is no longer with us either, and also struggled massively.
Yeah, he committed suicide as well, didn't he, Elliot?
I think it's recorded as, but it's slightly open. But yeah, so another Oscar winner, but no longer with us.
The other is Danny Elfman, I think, is the scores this track. Normally I find him very irritating, but in this...
Well, that's because he normally works with Tim Burton, and that's kind of the sound that they create when they're together.
I don't know. I'm not that big a Tim Burton fan, so I don't think it's that necessarily, but he always kind of gets my heckles up. I can use the heckles
I like him, but I like Tim Burton, so maybe I think there is a connection,
But otherwise, I love the Elliot Smith. I was like fascinated with Elliot Smith after this, and particularly Miss Misery and Between the Bars. I was like, yep, I love that to bits. And again, when I watched it, went to Spotify, downloaded it, and absorbed it all again. I think it all works really well.
And Gus Van Sant's the director as well. I would struggle to think who else at that time would direct a film in that way, because it was so well directed. And it was amazing that they actually managed to get it off the ground. If you think about it, they got Robin Williams and Gus Van Sant and these kids who'd only just broken out. They would say they'd been in Hollywood for about 10 years up until then, but... I saw an interview with Matt Damon recently. He was saying it was 5 years in the making of that film, which actually isn't even that long. But considering how new they were to get it off the ground, it's such a great story.
They tried so many places before Weinstein. It really was the Weinstein company that helped them do it, because apparently it was originally conceived as a thriller as well. Actually, the first script had thriller elements. And then they had people consulting and saying, actually, I think you should focus on the relationship between the therapist and Will, which is obviously a very smart move. But one scene I actually do really like in this film is the first date with Minnie Driver's character. I think that's really refreshing, because she's acting kind of goofy. It's not the kind of manic pixie dream girl kind of goofy. It's just a woman who snorts when she laughs and isn't afraid to put a false moustache on and some crazy glasses in as part of a joke. And she really kind of owns herself, that character, and she's not kind of kowtowing to him at all. And I thought that, even though she hasn't got enough to do in this film particularly, I thought that scene and the first early scenes, and I felt that she may have had something to do with it, because it just felt very British and very authentic, and perhaps connected to the actress that they cast.
They had a lot of trouble getting her through, because Ben Affleck and Matt Damon both wanted her in, and she was desperate to do it. And Harvey Weinstein and a lot of the other producers, I think, were also saying, no, you need someone more bankable, a hot girl. And of course, it wouldn't have worked, because that's the great thing about it. She was just smart and beautiful, but not in an overly sexy way, which you wouldn't have seen a lot of in 1996 or 7 when it came out. So they really championed for her. I'm so glad they did. But I have to say, when I first started watching it, I wasn't sure that she was right. I wasn't convinced. I thought it didn't really gel. And then the more and more I saw it, I thought, actually, no, the casting's quite brilliant. They work really well together.
But the irony is, of course, now she has also dated Matt Damon, has picked him up on his comments about Weinstein. So it's all got very interesting.
Well, she was also dumped on TV. So I think she's
got... by him?
Yeah, that's the famous thing where he... Was he on Letterman or something? And he announced that he was single or something. And... basically, at the time, they were still publicly together. She was famously dumped by Matt Damon.
I didn't know that. All I knew is she said that it ended, and it was dark the way it ended, and she wished they could have been friends. Wow!
Yeah.
Oh, that's disappointing.
So I do struggle with her character a bit, because I think at the start, she's quite brilliant and funny and fresh. But then I think, I don't know, she just kind of panders to him a bit too much and a bit quickly, and I would have liked to have maybe have been a bit stronger rather than sort of sobbing and distraught, been a bit more like, I love you, you're being an idiot kind of thing, rather than like her world's completely just ended because he's not going to move with her. So it shifts a little bit, and I don't know, I'm still not quite sure about
I had that. Some kind of again, you guys both bringing like thoughts I've had through watching the film. I had a similar kind of thing as well. And what made me reconcile it, in fact, the biggest problem I had was that the fact that the point where he's like hitting the wall and she's crying because he doesn't know if he wants to go to Stanford with her, is that this is the point where they both find out they were both like orphans or the parents died. And you think they've got this like big relationship and you're saying like, come to California, but they don't know like,
anything about them.
And that for me is like that's the biggest
faded about.
She should be more pissed off with him that he's been lying about having these brothers.
Yeah. So that was the biggest thing. But I thought her agency and the fact that she, in other films, she would have gotten, okay, I'll stay in Boston and we'll hang out for a bit longer. I was like, but she still, there was a kind of slight fawning thing where she's on the plane about to go, is he here?
It's a bit like, you've got a lot going for you and you were much cooler when you were like playing it cool. And I don't know, that I think that's a little bit of shame. But then I guess that's what happens when men write women, probably, sometimes.
Good point.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So do you think that would be different now than Anna, I guess, post Time's Up? And obviously, again, this is a very kind of straight white film, isn't it, as well? So I think had this come out, maybe Netflix would have bought it. This is kind of Netflix kind of thing, would have maybe liked this, and I think it would have been a bit more diverse in the play out. But I still think you would have had the central Will and Sean aspect of it.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with films that centre around men, that's fine, but I think now hopefully filmmakers do feel more of a responsibility to do justice to all the characters and also to have, you know, colourblind auditions and all those kind of things. So I think hopefully you would have seen more diversity and you would have seen characters who are a bit stronger written and, you know, had a bit more agency in terms of the females. And also you've got to think about the age that these guys were when they wrote this. It is kind of a bro film in sort of mainstream packaging. You know, they were, you know, writing about women, as you suggest, from not that much experience.
Sure. I mean,
let's face it.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I do think that even Hollywood films now are much more aware just in the last year. And we certainly found that from the guests that we've had on Girls on Film. Mm. They're much more aware that they have to be at least seen to be doing something, you know, for gender parity. They may not succeed, but they might try.
I think the things like Oscar So White and Time's Up are really helping. Mm. This year really pissed me off with the Oscars in that there were so many amazing female directed films that just didn't get a look in. But compare that to the Oscar So White, there weren't that many films in contention that had that would have been up for grabs. I think that had a non-white cast. But then, you know, 2 years later, that's changed a lot. But I think this year, there were just so many like awesome films with female.
Leave No Trace, You Were Never Really Here.
Yeah,
not a nomination.
Just
obscene.
That's bullshit.
But I think that's part of the problem of the Oscars anyway, and that it's going to take more than a few campaigns and people sort of calling it out. It's just because who mainly votes for the films that are included in there, and you know, it's part of Oscars culture that it's going to take a lot for that to really, really, really actually change and for them to actually continue doing it. So fair enough, they get called out 1 year, so they make it more diverse. And then the following year, they're like, oh, well, we did that last year, so we're all right. We can get away with
it.
Well, Oscar So White seems to have pervaded like a few years. So I'm hoping that it does mean...
I think it's so big now, it's not something that can just be... It's not like, oh, we'll just nominate Black Panther and that'll be it. It's like, no, this needs to change and things have to be moving all the time. And hopefully they will be. But yeah, I totally agree that, of course, it was a product of a film being made in the 90s that was nowhere near as diverse. Of course, it should have been, unfortunately. But... yeah, that's a problem a lot of films made like in that era had.
So we head to the scores.
Let's head over to the painted FlixWatcher scores. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we will start with you, Scarlett, with the recommendability, please.
So would I recommend this to people? Yeah, I would definitely recommend it to people because I just love it. And I would love people to see it, make up their own mind as well. I mean, there might be some people who it's not really their kind of film, but I don't know, 4.8, let's go for that.
Boom.
Just for the two not being there, just in case people have no interest in seeing it whatsoever, that they don't, for a lot of the reasons you've said, maybe they don't want to see a Weinstein film or something like that. I would completely understand, but I would still recommend this film.
Anna?
It's a tough one because I think if you haven't seen it before, then it's definitely a big piece of cinema. Mm-hmm. And I actually probably would recommend it to slightly younger viewers. And I hope that doesn't sound patronising, just because there are quite a few cliched elements in it overall, quite a few familiar elements that you will see coming if you've watched a lot of movies. But if you're a bit younger, then I think this one might sort of, you know, have been more rewarding. But I'd still probably go for a 3.5.
Helen?
Yeah, so I mean, it is hard to ignore a lot of the things that we've talked about, but you know, deep down, it is. I think it still holds up from when I watched it the first time round, and that really just for the Robin Williams performance, it's a great performance, and it's just really subtle and really warm, and I don't think it's particularly cliched, and. Yeah, I really enjoy it, so I'm going to go for a 4.5.
Yeah, 4.5 as well. I do love it, and I'm sure. Well, it's going to lean into the repeat viewing score, which is next. But when you recommended it, when you suggested you were doing it, I was like, yes, finally! I think it's one of the films I've been hoping someone had brought on would bring.
Had
on
it
to.
Always been on? I can't
no, it
remember.
Can. It bounces in and out. It bounces in and out. I think, or at least it bounces in and out of my feed when you log into it. So I don't know if it'd been there for a while or. Kind of disappears. Netflix, we don't understand how you do these things. But just like you said, Robin Williams. I've got a list of Robin Williams films here, and I think it's my favourite of his serious ones, certainly. But I think it might even be my favourite of his non-serious ones. Perhaps Aladdin is a
Aladdin's
bigger one for
great.
Me.
The Birdcage, incredible film.
Oh, we reviewed The Birdcage recently.
Did, yeah.
And that was a good
He's
one.
Fun in that.
Yeah.
Insomnia is really good, though. He's so good in that.
Yeah, and like he kind of
Dead Poets Society.
Yeah,
and 24-hour Photo. He seems to be creepy and
that's
weird
dark,
in
isn't
that.
It?
Yeah, I mean, I used to really, really, really love Good Morning Vietnam when I was younger. Mm. Just the energy that he has in that, and I think when I was a child, I'd watched Hook more than once. Yeah, I mean, it's terrible,
I loved it as a kid, but I'm scared to rewatch it. But
I think it was made for adults.
But it's still one of those nostalgia things, isn't it? You do kind of forgive your adult self if you watched it when you... Because I saw it in the cinema. It was probably with a few friends. You know, Peter Pan is a great thing to see in the cinema. And he's flying. It's like Robin Williams is flying. This guy is flying. So, but I understand everyone does say it's crap.
So I know what you mean about being a bit scared. You're like, I really hope it stands up. And it's just awful if you watch it and it doesn't.
Yeah, Dead Poets Society.
I love Dead Poets Society. Incredible. So great.
And Ferngully. So he's just an amazing, it was like him and Eddie Murphy, like two of the sharpest wits on the block. And he didn't die in that big year when everyone else died, but.
No, 2014 it was him.
Yeah, he gone, he went.
So sad.
This film's like 20 years old.
Yeah, it was, 22.
Thanks for freaks reminding
me. Out.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Freaks me the fuck out. Repeat viewing score. So in that 22 years, how many times do you think you watched it, Scarlett?
I watched it so many times. And also we should say Matt Damon is incredible in this film as well. Mm. He was nominated for an Oscar, he didn't win. But he's so good in this film. He's just, you can't not watch him.
He's very gorgeous as well.
He is very gorgeous.
Not to, you know, hashtag me to him, but yeah.
Oh yeah, he's a beautiful boy. Repeat viewing, I mean, come on, what am I going to... I've seen it so many times. It's a 5, obviously, for me. I think you keep on seeing it and you keep on noticing different things and yeah, gets me every time.
Anna?
Well, because I unfortunately was rather disappointed with it the second time, I'd say 3.5.
Is this only the second time you've seen it, do you think?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really?
I watched it when it came out. I may have watched it, half watched it another time.
Sure.
But, you know, as a film critic, you mostly spend your time watching new films. You don't actually have much time to revisit old ones. So, yeah, I mean, I probably saw it at a press screening when it came out.
Sure.
The passing of time, is, as I've said, it didn't stand up. But I think there are definitely aspects that I'd love to revisit. So obviously the Robin Williams performance and certain scenes I think are well worth revisiting.
That scene where he recounts meeting his wife for the first time.
Yeah, that's lovely.
This for like a serious film, there's a lot of good lines in this for me. Mm. And it is one of my favourite last lines in a film, like Son of a Bitch, She Stole My Line.
Yeah.
I love that to bits. So there's a lot of stuff in there for me that which I...
Yeah, and also we haven't really talked about the sense of kind of sort of regret but not regret that he has with Stellan Skarsgård's character, where there's obviously a lot of history between them. And
I mean Sean and Stellan.
Yeah.
Shaun and Mr. Lambo.
Yeah, and it's kind of shaped their relationship, and it's sort of you know, Sean's character maybe could have pushed himself more, and you wonder what happened or what moments kind of went on for them to be like that and to shape them. So that's another quite interesting relationship that's going on in the film.
So your repeat view, you said 3.5.
Yeah.
Helen?
I've definitely seen this once before. I don't know if I've seen it more than that, maybe. Okay. So I enjoyed revisiting it, but I don't know how likely I am to go back to it. And it is over 2 hours as well.
Just.
So I'm going to go for a 3.
I'm going to go for a 4 here. I think I probably watch it once every couple of years. And it tends to be on like a Sunday afternoon. And I'm like, yeah, that's what's good with hunting. I always forget it's 2 hours long. It doesn't feel that long for that kind of film. And I'm sure I will continue to watch it. And be more and more woke each time I watch it.
By the way, that's the same for me every 2 years. I don't watch it every week. Sure. I just want to clarify that. Like, it is like every 2-3 years.
But yeah, like 20 years, I've watched it like 8-ish times, I would have thought. Yeah. What did I say? I can't remember what I said.
4, you said 4.
4.
Good. Glad someone's paying attention. Small screen score. Did you see this in the cinema?
I didn't see this in the cinema. Mm. No, I was a little bit young for that when it would have come out in the cinema. So I've only ever seen it on the TV.
Yeah.
I've seen it on various sizes of TV. I have no reference point. I certainly wouldn't watch it on my phone. I don't think that would have the same effect. I'm not really a fan of watching films on phones anyway, unless they're quite silly and funny. But I think for this, you do need the bigger screen. So I'm just going to say, I can't keep on giving 5s. I'm going to give it a 4.
You can give it less than a 5, but a bit. You can give it a 5 if you want. Don't feel the need to...
You can dish out as many 5s as you like.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go for 4.5. I'm way too generous.
Anna?
So I think it's a 4 because I think it works perfectly fine so long as you're not on a tiny little screen.
Sure. Helen?
So I did not see this at the cinema. So I've only ever seen it on TVs of varying sizes. So I'm going to give it a 5. I think it's... I don't think I would have got anything else out of it or had a different experience had I watched it in the cinema. And again, if it's one of those films that maybe you've sort of heard about and not yet seen, it is on Netflix, so you can go and check it out. So it's nice that it's there and available.
Yeah, I'm going to 5 it as well. Often we talk about the kind of shared experience of watching it in the cinema, but I don't think I would have got that in this particularly. The soundtrack, you know, I liked Elliot Smith as a result of listening to it, but I don't think that really breathes down your neck in the same way that it needs to envelop you. So it looks great, even on a small screen. So yeah, 5. If this came on the Prince Charles Cinema, I don't think I'd really want to go. So yeah, I think I'm, 5, as I said. Engagement score. Scarlett.
Remind me, engagement score.
So engagement score is how much you are tied into the film. Once you press play, are you like playing, are you looking at Twitter, are you checking IMDb?
I mean, absolutely not for me. I feel like you're really, this is one of the things I really love about the film is that you are really engrossed all the way through. And I think it's a lot because of Gus Van Sant's direction. I just think he really draws you in. I have to say 5. I'm just going to do it. It's 5 for me.
Don't feel embarrassed. Anna.
Do you know, I have to say I wasn't gripped. I mean, because this is the second time I've viewed it, of course, I think if the first time I watched it, I would have been quite gripped. Mm-hmm. But obviously, I know what happens. So I was drifting off because it is quite long. And I do think some scenes feel a little bit surplus to requirements. And there are other aspects that could have used more work, more characterization. As you're saying about the Stellan Skarsgård character, a bit more of that I thought would have been good. It's kind of split its focus a little bit between a lot of characters. So I'm going to go for A3.
Helen.
I'm trying to think about how engaged I was on the first time versus now. So obviously the second time around, I kind of was like, oh yeah, I remember this bit, but not 100% engaged because I was doing a little bit of like trivia thingy because it's just like the background's quite interesting. So I 4.
I think I'm going to go for 4.5 here. I didn't see this at the cinema purely because it probably wasn't the kind of film I watched at 17 when it came out. But when I saw it, and I think it was like a film 4 type thing, and press play or just sorry, turn the channel on, and I was just like from the start, I was like, yes, I really like this. And I'd seen Ben Affleck and Matt Damon in Kevin Smith stuff before, so I kind of knew of them, but didn't really I think no one knew what kind of people they could become. I think they were always like kind of side jokes almost, or kind of funny characters. But I just love the way that there's that story behind them, that they felt they needed to do something to make further their careers, and they produced this thing. And it does help me kind of engage in the film a bit more. So I'm really big fan of it. 4.5. And that gives us an overall score of 4.3 exactly.
Wow. Exactly. Very strong.
Yeah. So we do reach out to Twitter before we record. And in this case, we said, we're reviewing hashtag Good Will Hunting with Anna Smith-Journeau and Scar Rose Russell from ST Style. Have you seen it? Give us your thoughts, an on-air shout-out on FlixWatcher with a 5-star review and your thoughts. We had a couple of responses. Scarlett, can you take us through the first one?
Sure. So shall I read out the user as well?
Yes, please.
That is Amanda's pick show A Go-Go, and she says the acting and writing are top-notch. I watched it again about a year ago and was surprised how well it holds up.
Anna, can you take the last one?
So Death by Film podcast has said 5 stars and all-timer, such good dialogue.
So true. The dialogue is so strong for these kids. It's such an accomplished script. You know, they've got really intelligent dialogue throughout. It's quite impressive.
It sounds like what you, Anna, you were talking about the making of it, the background behind it, where they probably went down a typical like young male trying to make a film and thinking thriller aspect, and other people saying, no, pare it down. This is the core of the
film.
Probably
had like boobs in it and all kinds of stuff like that.
Essentially, yeah. But having someone there, it's still important to have someone there to give you a bit of focus and like get to the core of the story.
And a lot of the people that made the most successful films have listened to other people, and you go to the top people.
George Lucas,
you ask
for example,
them how they do it. Yeah.
Have you seen how Star Wars was created in the edit?
No.
Because there's like a short YouTube video about 15 minutes long, and apparently George Lucas showed the first cut to Spielberg and Scorsese, and they were like, dude, this is dog shit. You need to change it. And it's really like, look out for it. It's like just a 15 minute clip, and they just explain what they thought was wrong with it. And he went back and changed a lot of it and made it into the epic that it was. So if it had gone out so you do need those people to foster you.
Friends in the right places.
Yeah. They touched on that in the Steven Spielberg documentary. Have you seen that? I think it's just called Spielberg, because it was all friends, and he gave George Lucas loads of feedback. And so he said something about, so I should really be credited for Star Wars. But it's so true. They were all Francis Ford Coppola.
That's
mates. So they were all in the same crew, and kind of, it's wonderful. Yeah, they all influenced each other.
Right. Thank you very much for coming on, guys. Can you give us a sign up by telling us where we can find you online?
So you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Anna Smith Journeau, as in journalist. There you can find out more about Girls on Film. We post all the latest episodes, but you can also find us on Spotify, SoundCloud and iTunes. And please subscribe.
Cool.
So you can find out more about me on Twitter at Scar Rose Russell and Instagram at Scarlett Rose Russell. And on thetimes.co.uk/style is where we have all our amazing entertainment content for Style magazine. We also have a free video website, Style Play. And by now you'll be able to see some amazing Sienna Miller videos, Billy Porter videos. We've got so much great content out there that's wonderful and exclusive to Style. So please do look at it.
Fantastic.
Thanks
very much.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Bye.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you. You just heard a Stripped Media production.